Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. I am Abi Dauji and this is the big picture where anything can happen and usually does. Here you will find a whole lot of political analysis with a large healthy spoonful of masala to spice things up. Well, it's been such a long time, eh? Such a long time since I spoke to you. Ish! And how I missed you. Oh! Yes, that is the question, actually. How much did I miss you? Well, I must confess, not at all. Nothing. Zero. I was very, very far away from the Malema, Ramaphosa, Zuma drama and the cold weather and the crime and the grime and the Chorwan politicians stealing your tax money, wagera, wagera. Yes, far from the madding crowd, my dear Bhai Orbeno. But before I tell you about that, let's go to the weird and wonderful stories that made it into the newspapers. Crazy stuff that proves there is no shortage of mamparas in this world. Here is a story from Sky News that really made me laugh and laugh and laugh. You see, there's a zoo in Egypt that has all kinds of animals. The zoo is known as the International Garden in Nasser City in Cairo. I remember the zoo. We pass it on our way from the airport to the city center. I think I will stop there in December with my group to do some first-hand investigation. Because, listen to this, the zoo does not have one particular type of animal. There's one particular animal it doesn't have, and that is the zebra. The zebra. So, what to do, hey? What to do? No problem, Habibi. Just take a donkey and some black paint and paint some nice black stripes and voila, you have a zebra. That, it seems, is exactly what happened. Let me read to you from this news article. Egyptian student Mahmoud Sarhan, 18 years old, was visiting the zoo in Nasser City, Cairo, when he spotted the suspiciously striped creature. Mr. Sarhan captured a photo of the animal that appears to show black smudges smeared across its face. He told Sky News, "From the first sight I knew that it was a donkey, not a zebra, as I am an artist. Local radio station, Nogum FM Net, contacted the zoo's director, Mohammed Sultan, who denied that the animal was a donkey. His comments came as the Egyptian news site extranews.tv sent images of the animal to a local vet named Dr. N, who pointed out that zebras usually have a black nose and mouth area. Black nose and mouth area. The animal in Mr. Sarhan's photo appears to be pale in this area of the face." Oh, heavens. So there you are. And I am wondering who was the donkey working at the zoo. Who was the donkey working at the zoo who decided to paint the animal to look like a zebra? We heard about fake news, but now we've got fake animals. What next? Well, they'll probably get a hippo, put a plastic horn on it, and call it a rhinoceros. You can see the photograph. Just Google Sky News Egyptian zoo and zebra, and you will see the picture. They're quite a funny one. Okay, to the next story. Next year in April, inshallah, I will be taking my first group to China. There's always the worry when you visit China about what to eat in China. We hear all kinds of stories. If you ask for a hot dog, there's a good chance that you may be eating a real dog. Yeah. Or you could have a snake and kidney pie, eh? Snake and kidney pie. You got that one, right? Alhamdulillah, we, that's a group, next year will be eating at halal certified places. But some people in the group may want to try something a little bit exotic. Here's a note to my dear ladies. Please, please don't mention the story to the bully just when he got a mouthful of akni and achar. Hey, you ladies can be so cruel, eh? Okay. And to this weird story. It says here, after two people in China were admitted to the hospital with headaches and other neurological symptoms, doctors pinpointed an infection with an unusual backstory. These people had eaten raw centipedes. They had eaten raw centipedes. Can you believe it? Let me just get to that here. Where was I now? Right. So, centipede is, of course, we all know in Durban, is known as Shongololo. Right? Shongololo. So they were admitted to hospital with headaches and other neurological symptoms. This was reported in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. The first patient, a 78-year-old woman, came to the hospital on November 2012 with a headache, sleepiness, and cognitive impairment. Weeks later, her 46-year-old son also came to the hospital with a headache that had lasted for more than 20 days. Both patients had stiff necks, which is a sign of possible meningitis, and scans showed two suspicious spots in the woman's brain and one nodule in the man's right lung. Both patients had something in common. They had eaten raw centipedes, chongololos, from a vegetable market in China. Lab tests confirmed that they were infected with rat lungworm, otherwise known as Angiostrongylus cantonensis. Which had caused a type of meningitis. Humans have become infected with the parasite by eating contaminated plants and animals, including snails, slugs, and even monitor lizards. But it was not known to be caused by eating centipedes, which have long been used in Chinese traditional medicine. Still, it is rare to eat them raw. And Dr. Ling Li Lu, one of the reporter's authors and a neurologist at Zhongzheng Hospital in China, told CNN in an email, "Ha, centipedes are not a normal diet. The patient believes eating raw centipedes are good for health. And so he ate some and gave some to his mother." Well, to confirm that it could have been the centipedes, the researchers purchased 20 of them from the same market where the two patients had gotten theirs. They found rat lungworm larvae in 7 of the specimens, an average of 56 larvae per centipedes. Eish. Ladies, don't you dare speak about this at lunchtime, okay? Kabardar. Right, now to the next weird story. In Japan, you can hire an anonymous old bully to tell your problems to, or accompany you to some function, or maybe just have a game of chess. I'm serious. You can hire an anonymous bully. It's actually legitimate business. The Japanese word for these bullies is osan, which means middle-aged man. One of them is 48-year-old Ken Sasaki, and he spoke to CNN, and he allows himself to be hired by anyone for nearly any purpose not involving physical contact, as long as they pay his hourly wage, which is just around $9 per hour. And he loves it. As in many cities around the globe, most people in Tokyo prefer anonymity when it comes to their wants and needs and vulnerabilities. Urban citizens may be desperate to get advice from an older, wiser person, but they don't want to turn to the guy they're working with for years, or an uncle who remembers the tears shed over the broken toy truck. Someone familiar might judge them. It's much better to pour your troubles into a stranger's ear, grab the good advice and run. And so goes the logic of Takanobu Nishimoto, 50 years old, who founded an online service called Osan Rental Service in 2012. Renting a stranger for advice and meeting in, say, a cafe means you will never have to meet again. And he says, stories will spread if clients talk to someone they know. Hey, it makes sense, doesn't it? Many middle-aged men become jobless and amid economic troubles in 1989. Though it started slow, Takanobu Nishimoto, his website has roughly 45 osan rentals, these bullies. 45 osan rentals a day, or 10,000 encounters per year. His website boasts almost 80 uncles in 36 cities, including Nishimoto's base of Tokyo, as well as Kyoto, Osaka, and Tokushima. The uncle's past and present occupation include engineer, right? The mentor's past and present occupations include engineer, tour operator, financier, real estate and insurance entrepreneur, marketing and HR, driver, and a research and development scientist who now runs a technical consultancy company. Hey, did you hear that, eh? Tour operator. Amongst those uncles is a tour operator. Now, that's a good business idea. Maybe I should look into it, eh? I won't call the uncles I am renting out osans. I think I'll call them kosans. I'm sure there must be dozens of retired old-timers in Overport whose only job is to take the grandkids to school and fetch them again after madrasa. Maybe I can make their lives a little exciting. What do you think, eh? Hey, hey, watch out. Don't steal my idea. Okay? Right. Okay, now for some very serious and sad stuff. Well, we'll wait for a little while just after the break for that interview. Okay, let's move on to another issue and one that is frequently traumatic for me. It's that time of the year. That time of the year again when I get the list of ingredients that I have to get from for the mitai and all of that stuff for Eid. The list. And the place I have to get the stuff from is the shop opposite the house of you-know-who with that eagle eye. Very traumatic indeed. So, well, I tried once again to get there. Incognito, disguised. There's the Caminetto's pizza place in Sparks Road. Well, I gave the delivery chap $50 and put on his jacket with the pizza sign on the back. I got onto his scooter with the pizza logo all over it. And I pulled down a big floppy red hat that hid my whole head. And put on dark glasses and shot up the road to that shop. My one foot was in the door already. I think I made it. No chance. Suddenly, the combined sound of 100 Formula One cars all together doing a wheel spin filled the air. Birds flew out of the trees. Yes, it was the human vuvuzela, Halima Khala. Hey. Taoji, yeah, oh, come here. Paralyzed at the entrance of the shop, I turned slowly and walked over to her veranda.
Hey, Taoji, where you was, eh? Didn't see you long time. How was it in Polokwane? My cousin is there, Mamu Chata, they call him. They call him Mamu Chata. You met him, eh? You came back today from Polokwane.
Well, I was very mystified by this, eh? Very mystified.
Polokwane? What was he talking about?
So I said, Kala, I didn't go to Polokwane. Who said I went there?
And she replied, I heard my nephew Imran telling his friend on the phone that you went to Petersburg for 2 weeks.
Well, the gadut came right out of me. I said, Kala,
I went to St. Petersburg in Russia. And she answered, yeah, but did you meet Mahmud Chacha? He got a butcher there. Nice place, eh, Polokwane, eh?
As I bolted out of the place, I said, yes, Kala, very nice place. Next time I go, I'll send you a postcard from there. And so, dear listeners, let me tell you a little bit about Russia. Let me tell you a little bit about Russia. There's actually a lot to say, but it will fill the whole program. As you know, I just got back from Russia. 50 of us went there for 2 weeks. Let me say this. Before going there, I was ready to be bored. Yeah. I expected Russians to be very cold people, like what the media makes them out to be. All very stiff and unfriendly and cities full of drab Soviet-style buildings and so on. Boring. And, of course, the place will be full of armed police and soldiers ready to drag you off to Siberia at the slightest sign of misbehavior. That's the impression I had before leaving from here. Well, let me tell you this. All of us, yes, all of us were totally knocked out at how vibrant, dynamic Russia is, how relaxed and friendly the people are, and how much the place is full of beautiful buildings, cultural centers and parks, and I can go on and on and on. Not a policeman or soldier in sight. The place is rocking. I wonder if I can use that word on this Islamic radio station. Anyway, what can I tell you? One of the highlights was, of course, the Kremlin, especially that famous landmark, the multicolored collection of what looked like minarets with a sultan's hat at the top of each one, the Red Square. A special visit was made to the Moscow subway, the tube station, underground tube station. Okay, so now you are thinking, how can that be a highlight? Don't get so impatient, okay? Let me tell you. We went deep underground via long escalators, and then we encountered an amazing sight. Going from one huge underground station to another, I think we must have done about five or six, we saw each one decorated with incredible artworks and chandeliers and frescoes, mosaics and statues. Oof, it's so hard to describe. Very, very, very beautiful. Like walking through an art gallery. And of course, we wanted to have some experience of the Muslims of Russia. Let me just tell you what our program, this is what we did there. We enjoyed a guided tour of the Muslim heritage of Moscow. We visit the central Moscow mosque, which is known as the Moscow Cathedral Mosque. That is the biggest mosque in Europe. The sixth-floor mosque has 79-meter-high minarets, which are the tallest in Europe. Then we proceed to visit the memorial mosque that was built in 1997 in memory of Muslim soldiers who died in the Great Patriotic War of 1941-1945. And of course, we crown the day with a visit to the old mosque of Moscow that was built in 1823 to replace an earlier private mosque that had been destroyed in the 1812 fire. I just read that out from the itinerary. We were given a guided tour of the central mosque by the imam, a very, very bubbly character who told us, much to our surprise, that there is almost no Islamophobia in Moscow, in Russia, in fact. And, in fact, Putin himself had cut the ribbon to inaugurate the masjid. The visit to the masjid was really, really moving and very inspiring indeed. Let me get my bearings here a little bit. Looking for something as I speak to you. Right, I got it. We were given a guided tour, as I said, and we visited many, many majestic museums. Got a bit of a flu, sorry about that. Majestic museums and spectacular cathedrals, breathtaking parks, and incredibly beautiful palaces. Tourists were full up in Moscow. We walked in a long queue for about 2 hours to visit Lenin's tomb in Red Square. It is a mausoleum which is a resting place of Vladimir Lenin. His preserved body, actually quite remarkably preserved body, has been on public display since shortly after his death in 1924. Did you get that? He died in 1924. And we filed past one by one, past his body, on display on a big granite slab. He was dressed to the T in a suit and tie. His body was so well preserved that even the hair on his mustache looked perfectly natural. I expected the mortar to wake up any minute and say, "Hey, welcome to Russia, my Chinas." From Moscow, we took an overnight train to Kazan. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. We go for a quick break, and when we get back, it will be all about Kazan. Right, welcome back. The program is called The Big Picture. And before we go and visit Kazan in Russia, we are going to take a break and speak to an important guest, and that is Brother Iqbal Jasad of the Media Review Network, who is going to pay tribute to a towering personality who has just passed away. Brother Iqbal Jasad, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Shukran for inviting me, AV, and lovely talking to you.
And nice talking to you also. So please go ahead with your tribute.
Well, AV, I think South Africa today mourns the loss of a wonderful leader, a great man, highly devoted not only to the cause of the poor and downtrodden in this country, but of course for the cause of justice and human rights across the world. The loss of Sheikh Ehsan Hendrik certainly will leave a vacuum within the ulama fraternity in this country, and of course in the lives of many ordinary people in all walks of life. I think in the short life that he had, having passed on at the very tender age of 54, certainly reminds us indeed of the limited opportunities that we have as individuals to be able to make our mark in the best way possible that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala provides us with the opportunities of life. And certainly in the case of Sheikh Ehsan, we have a personality who, from a very tender age, had made such an indelible imprint that his legacy, I believe, will continue in many different ways. I am profoundly moved by the number of tributes that I've read and have heard in the last few hours, AB, to understand what a wonderful and charismatic and devoted leader he has been, and the kind of impact that he's made in many different ways throughout this country and, of course, all over the world. I think the most important contribution that people will remember him for, AB, is the fact that he single-handedly brought the entire focus of Palestine to South Africa in a way that nobody else had ever before, especially in contemporary times, succeeded in doing. He was a formidable force, outspoken, clearly and utterly committed to the cause of justice. And I think in that regard, the many achievements that he had gained, as I said, during his short period, has certainly made a huge impact and will be felt. This loss will be felt not only in South Africa, but across the world. And I know from the messages that we have received from people who are closely connected with him within Palestine in the occupied territories, and of course amongst the diaspora, will certainly be mourning the passing of a wonderful, great spiritual mentor to me, and obviously a person who was deeply committed to human rights and justice.
There you are, a wonderful tribute to a wonderful man, as I said, a towering personality on the South African and international stage. Iqbal Jasad, Jazakallah Khair for that moving tribute to Sheikh Ehsan Hendrik. Yes, we feel sad, but more than that, we acknowledge and celebrate his life, the life of this tireless activist. Jazakallah once again.
Shukran, AB.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Right, folks, as I said, we will now visit Kazan. That's where we went to after Moscow. And where was I? Yeah, we took an overnight train. We took an overnight train to Kazan, which is, of course, a Muslim-majority area. Incidentally, last night, my second group of 51 people left for Kazan, and they have just arrived there now, and I'm sure they are looking thoroughly babalas. It's a train with sleeper cabins, of course, many of them slept very well in my group, but I was struggling a bit. The train shook this way and that, and that gadak, 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 and all that sounds. It didn't allow me to get much sleep. Now, Kazan is a province in of Tatarstan. That's what it's called, Tatarstan. That's where it is. Kazan is an area in Tatarstan. Here again, there are many sights to see, and of course a visit to one of the largest mosques in Russia, known as Kal Sharif Masjid. We went to a masjid that had a madrasa, and a very well, which was very well equipped and organized. When I say well organized, there was a section for blind students. And that really inspired us as we walked around and saw how well equipped and organized it was. And from Kazan, we flew to St. Petersburg. What a place, eh? What a place. I would say that it's a cross between Amsterdam and Venice and Milan and London and so on. A vibrant city that never seems to sleep. Step out of our hotel and you are in the main street, a very wide street, perhaps 6 lanes wide and stretching in a straight line for a couple of kilometers with all kinds of brand shops and restaurants and coffee shops and bustling and chock-a-block with people. Like being in Oxford Street, London, or Times Square in New York. We read Jumu'ah Salah at the great mosque of St. Petersburg, which was filled to capacity with, I think it was a few thousand people. We took a day cruise along the network of waterways, which are canals, wide canals that crisscross the city. And we took the same cruise for 2 hours at midnight, can you believe it? At midnight, just to get an amazing different kind of a view of the city at night. Lots to speak about, but at the same time, very difficult to describe the incredible beauty of the palaces, the masajid, and parks, and cathedrals. Okay, let me wrap this up with some very trivial points. Now, before we left for Russia, I was told by many that you better keep Roza, because chow is a big problem in Russia. Nothing of the sort. We were chowing like crazy at halal places. At one Uzbek restaurant, they actually put copies of the halal certificate on each table just so that we know for certain that it is halal. Right outside of our hotel was a Turkish place with killer falafel wraps. And then we also flocked down the road to the Mumbai restaurant. Oh, Mumbai restaurant, where people chowed till they were too paralyzed to move. Dr. Vauda and his fro and I polished off karai lamb ghost, jeera rice, butter chicken, veg karai, and at the next table, Shokat and Sumaya dived into the mutton biryani with raita and papar. So yes, some of us chowed so much that we came back with excess baggage. And the weather. I heard conflicting reports before I left that the weather would be cold. Now, I don't like cold. We urbanites sometimes wear jerseys in summer if it gets a little cloudy. St. Petersburg was steaming hot, reaching up to 33 degrees. Serious, 33 degrees. I turned a darker shade of dark brown. Oh, and one thing, talking about dark brown, it's a very rare sight to see Indians. Maybe just some tourists in Punjabis or fellows working in the Indian restaurants. And now, to an important point. Because it's so hot, Russians wear very little clothes. Especially the ladies. Lowering the gaze was a very, very big problem for most of the uncles in the group. Of course, not for me. I never look at ladies. I've been told that Russian ladies are very, very beautiful. And I've also been told, of course I didn't check, that they were sunbathing on the grassy areas where our bus was passing to get a tan, because many are very pale. Real whiteys, eh? Well, that's what I was told. I never looked at them. One chap's fro told him, "Let me hold your hand and lead you everywhere. You just look up at the sky and walk, okay?" So that's it. All arranged very well by the tour company of Valentina and the excellent expert guides Ivan, Ramesh and Julia, also known as Sally, who, believe it or not, are actually listening to this program right now. Listening to the program right now. And I say hi to them. And therefore, for doing a great job, let's give them a big round of applause. And finally, I was going to reveal some juicy bits about some people's behavior on the tour. Some people in my tour group. Huh? But they threatened me with even worse comments about me. All lies, I tell you, all lies. I never went to the ballet to see Sleeping Beauty. Who wants to see someone sleeping, eh? So silly. Yes, I went to the world famous Moscow Circus, but only looked at the lions and jugglers and covered my eyes, unlike the rest of the group, when the ladies did all those twists and turns on the trapeze and the high wire. Right, we don't have much time left. Let me move to some other issues. Leaving Russia and going to some other issues. On Thursday, my heart stopped. Metaphorically speaking, of course, not literally. I just threw in those words to sound very clever. Yes, I was really shocked at what I saw on news on the TV. It stunned me and brought tears to my eyes. Now, almost every day we see horrific scenes of carnage in Afghanistan and Syria and Kashmir, Iraq, people being bombed and so on. But Thursday night, two such shocking episodes, one after the other, got me wondering what kind of world are we living in. The first one was the scene of a massacre, a missile said to be from a coalition jet, meaning the Saudis, bombed a bus full of school children returning from a summer camp in Yemen. The bombing took place in Yemen. They'd just been returning after a wonderful summer camp. Bloodied bodies were removed from the burnt out bus. Injured children with their shoulder bags still on their backs were rushed to the badly equipped hospitals. One scene, chilled me to the bone. A father went from one open bucket, checking in the back, went from one to another, looking for his boy. They were just bodies that were covered. And then he removed the cloth covering the bodies and saw his son. The sound of his wailing will be with me for a very long time. He couldn't believe that the little broken body was his beloved child. He kissed him over and over and wailed in a really heart-wrenching way. Heart-wrenching. People were running with the remains of their children. I can't tell you how shocked I am. The Saudis released a statement saying that the rebels were using the children as human shields. Using the children as human shields. For heaven's sake, it was a busy marketplace. It was a school bus. What human shields are you talking about? 50 dead and 70 injured. But who cares, eh? Not America. Donald Trump signed a deal for $64 billion to supply weapons to Saudi Arabia to kill people in Yemen. 45% of Britain's arms sales goes to Saudi Arabia. France and others also sell arms to the Saudis. So, Mamu, business is business, hey? One busload of school children? Ah, well, some people have to die in war, isn't it? And the Saudis sound so much like the Israelis. Those it kills are civilians that Hamas is using as human shields. That's what they say. Sickening. Yesterday, 3 Palestinians were shot dead at the border fence where hundreds were demonstrating and dozens injured. Nothing happens to the snipers who kill as they like. They killed a medical person. What kind of threat was he? But the second news item on TV after the attack on the bus in Yemen that shocked me to tears was the scene of a house in Gaza that was bombed by Israel. The camera showed the entire wall of the room and the whole ceiling covered in blood. People were sleeping there before that. A young man, his wife and child. The man is in a serious condition. His wife, 23 years old and almost 9 months pregnant, and the child, 1.5 years old, were blown to pieces. To pieces! Pieces! The blood on the walls and ceiling. I read an Al Jazeera report. Here it is. An Al Jazeera report. Hundreds of mourners in Gaza have attended the funeral of Inas Abu Khamsa, a 23-year-old pregnant woman, and her 18-month daughter, Bayan, who were both killed during an overnight barrage of Israeli air attacks and artillery shelling. One of the areas hit overnight in Gaza City was Deir al-Balah, where Inas, almost 9 months pregnant with a baby girl, her husband Mohammed and Bayan have been living since April 2017. On Wednesday, the family opted to sleep in the living room by a balcony overlooking a small garden that allows for some cool air to enter the small apartment, especially during winter summer nights when electricity to run air conditioning is barely available. At around 2 a.m., 2 powerful explosions were heard, neighbors told Al Jazeera. Khalid Abu Sanjar, one of several neighbors who rushed to the scene, said, "As soon as I heard, I knew the attack targeted Muhammad's home." Witnesses said what they saw in the immediate aftermath of the attack was shocking. The attack had ripped right through their living room, destroying the front end of the family's apartment. Abu Sanjar said, "There was blood everywhere. We were shaken to the core. We saw the remains of Inas and Bayan and immediately called the ambulance and began collecting the body parts." Abu Sanjar said, "Muhammad was still screaming when help arrived." According to Ashraf Al-Kidra, the spokesperson for the health ministry in Gaza, Muhammad suffered serious injuries to the head and other parts of his body. According to his brother Kamal, who also ran to the house after being informed by the neighbors, he says, "Muhammad said he hit his head on the ceiling and fell on the floor because of the intensity of the airstrike." The 30-year-old Muhammad is being treated at a local hospital. He is still unaware of his family's fate. Inside the wrecked apartment, ruins are all that remain, with damaged furniture and blood-spattered walls. Toys and stuffed animals are crushed and covered in rubble. Bayan's crib is still standing. Inside, there's a pair of tiny shoes. Inas's 19-year-old sister Iman told Al Jazeera on Thursday, "My sister was only sleeping. Why did she have to die like this?" Iman said all her sister ever wanted was to work hard to be able to secure a bright future for her family and children. The two had spent the last few weeks together picking out new baby clothes for the arrival of Inas's second daughter, who was to be named Razan. Iman said, "I can't understand it. I wish the Israeli soldier could, who fired at my sister and niece, could for a second feel what I'm feeling inside. I want him to feel the pain and agony that I now have to live with." Muhammad's siblings say they fear for his well-being and say they cannot fathom losing another brother so quickly. Muhammad's 23-year-old brother Kamal was among at least 70 other Palestinians who were shot dead by Israeli forces on May 14 during Gaza's Great March of Return rallies. Muhammad's sister Faiza says, "We are still recovering from my other brother Kamal's death." The 40-year-old said the whole family shared a meal together hours before Wednesday night's attack. "We were all at my brother's house. Everything was fine when we left," Faiza said to Al Jazeera. "Perhaps we were meant to be there as a final goodbye." What a chilling story. Can we really, really understand or feel their pain? I know that the people of Gaza are in an absolutely desperate situation. Their lives are completely wrecked by the siege, the big prison in which they live. So they resort to desperate actions. They assemble at the border, burning tires, flying kites and balloons that's filled with petrol to burn some of the Israeli farmlands. Just a little, a token gesture to try to hit back a little. And the Israelis hit back in a big way with live bullets. In desperation, the militant groups fire rockets into Israel. They do little or no damage, and Israel hits back very hard. Palestinian militants fired 150 rockets into Israel 2 or 3 days ago that did little damage, and Israel fired 140 missiles that killed many and destroyed buildings, a cultural center, and so on. A very high price to pay. I know that the people of Gaza are desperate and have to do something, but my view now is that the firing of rockets must stop because the price is too high. Too many people are killed by Israel. Yes, you may disagree with me. And yes, it's a difficult decision, but the 23-year-old pregnant young lady and her little child died, and so many others. Israel has a powerful killing machine. Killing machine, one of the strongest armies in the world, and it kills and nobody does anything. Definitely not Mahmoud Abbas and his cronies, who are partners with Israel in the suffering of the people of Gaza. Dr. Ramzi Baruch says it very clearly in an article which I put into my newsletter last night. If you want the newsletter, just send me an email, abie@iafrica.com. I send it out every day, and yesterday's article is in which Dr. Ramzi Baruch points a finger at Mahmoud Abbas and says that he is complicit in the suffering of the people of Gaza. Well, not much time left. I don't have anything for you in the department of, let's see if I got anything for you for light at the end of the tunnel. Alright, here's a quick one. An oldie, but a goldie. A revamped one. Hope you haven't heard it before. Ronnie from Beer Bank ended up in ICU once again, and Gulambai went to visit him. "Hey, what happened this time, Ronnie?" And Ronnie replied, "Hey, my wife hit me with the rolling pin, man." And Gulambai said, "Why she did that?" Because she asked me, "Ronnie, tell me, how would you describe me?" So I answered her, "Darling, you are A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K." And she asked what that means. And I said, each letter stands for something. A for adorable, B for beautiful, C for cute, D for delightful, E for elegant, F for fashionable, G for gorgeous, H for heavenly. Then she said, "But what about I, J, K? You didn't mention that." Well, I laughed and I told her, "It stands for I'm just kidding." Hell, she gave me one hell of a shot. Gullo, hey, I'm finished here. Right, well, that's all. I have to say assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to listeners of Radio Islam. And after the news, I will continue on another radio station, inshallah. So stay tuned to that radio station.